first of all, I was very, very lucky. My general manager, Otis Smith, and I had a, I think, one of the best relationships you could ever have in pro sports. There's a lot of times a tension between a general manager who's putting a team together, the personnel, and the guy who has to coach them, because a lot of times a general manager thinks, boy, I've put this great team together, and if they're not playing well, it must be the coach. And the coach's viewpoint is always, boy, I'm doing a great job, but if he would only give me better players. And I think both of us were able to put that aside and just realize we were dependent on each other, and we were both going to do our parts to do anything we could for the team. And so we were very honest with each other and very direct, and I was lucky in that. But as far as staff, you know, I was able to hire my own staff, and I spent, from what I know of other people, I spent more time talking to people for that staff than people typically do. I interviewed 19 people. I was literally flying all over the country to talk to people, you know, and spent a lot of time talking to other people, my brother who had coached in the NBA, and to Otis, my general manager, and really talking it through. I spent a lot of time because I knew that who I was working with was the key, that I wasn't going to be able to do it myself. I needed good people, and I needed people I could trust. And I needed strong people who would tell me what they thought, and I was able to get that.
Could you share with us, is there a story from your time with the Magic that maybe you discovered something you were doing wasn't working the way you wanted it to, and what kind of change you had to make to affect that?
Well, with players, I had it all the time. I mean, and primarily, you know, Jameer Nelson and Dwight Howard were two guys who would tell me at times, you know, I mean, hey, I think you were a little too hard on us or a little too negative, and guys are getting a little bit down. They need to be picked up. So I would get that quite a bit. Specific times, boy, I'm not a great anecdote guy. You know, but with the assistant coaches almost on a daily basis, and where they really, as far as those things, would have a lot of input is, you know, we'd sit in our meetings and talk about what we needed to do. And almost every day, one of them would say, hey, you need to talk to so-and-so. You know, here's what's going on. Because players will open up more to assistants than to the head coach. And so they would know what was going on and say, you know, you need to talk to so-and-so. His confidence is down. Or you need to talk to so-and-so. He thinks he should be, or he doesn't understand why he's not playing more, or whatever. And, you know, those guys sort of keep you on track. I mean, your assistant coaches know the pulse of the team. Your team leaders know that, and you've got to be willing to listen to them.
Do you feel like the coach is such a leadership position, such a public leadership position, and we know that's your role in the basketball arena, but does that style extend into other parts of your life as well? Like, are you different when you're the coach as opposed to when you're Stan Van Gundy at home?
I think so. I mean, I think that, you know, I think one of the problems is, and I think my family would say that, is, you know, you start to bring home the wins and losses, especially the losses and things like that. But I'm definitely different, and especially now being away from it. I mean, the stress level goes way down. They're a lot more willing to take, you know, input from people and things like that. And I don't mean in terms of a coaching sense, but, you know, the one thing about coaching, you take a lot of input. But at the end of the day, as the leader, you've got to be the one who sets the standards and enforces those. And this is our culture. This is how we're going to work. And we might have different methods. I might listen to different methods, whether it's a little bit more rest or a little bit more positive. But we're not going to change our basic expectations because this is what we think is important for winning and for getting things done. Away from coaching, I'm a lot more, you know, concerned, I guess, with what other people think the standards should be and everything else. I'm not as worried. I don't have to be the enforcer, and I enjoy that, to be quite honest.
We've got a couple questions from our listeners. They were submitted via Twitter, and I wondered if we could just ask you a few of them. Jared asks from Twitter, what is your stance on for-profit education?
Well, look, I would say this. I'm not trying to evade anything. I'm someone who's got an opinion on everything and will usually give it. But what I am trying to avoid in all of this is distractions. I don't think there's any doubt then in addition to more money, that there's reforms that can be made and things that can be tweaked in the schools. But I haven't heard one yet that offers better education and better educational results where we don't have to spend more money. I mean, money's still going to be – look, somebody said the other day at one of these meetings, you know, they talked about countries that are getting better results around the globe. Well, it's pretty easy for me anyway to look at them. They're mostly all doing year-round education or some version of it, which we don't do. We're still on this agrarian calendar that makes no sense. I mean, my kids aren't harvesting crops in the summer, and most of us aren't, but we're on that calendar. So they're giving more days of school in the world, and they're doing longer days. Well, not hard to – even intuitively, you say, yeah, that makes sense. If they're spending more time in a classroom, they're going to learn more. How are we going to do that spending less money? If you're going to do – you're going to have buildings open longer, so energy and things like that, you're going to pay more. You're going to have to pay the teachers more if they're going to work longer. All of these things require more money. So when you ask about for-profit, number one, I would say certainly hasn't worked on the college level very well. I mean, if you look at the for-profit universities. But no matter how you look at it, we're simply not investing enough right now in our education. That's going to have to change. Now, if there's things we can do with the money to be more effective, I think I'd be open to them. I know that Walt Griffin, the superintendent of schools, will be open to them and the school board. But the funding issue is still going to have to be taken care of.
And we should say you have your own children who are in Seminole County Public Schools, and they're actually here in the studio with us.
Well, one of them is. My daughter, Kelly, is here. She's here with her friend, Sophia. And, you know, they're here listening to the interview, and I'm sure I'll get plenty of feedback on it on the way out. But, you know, it's interesting. We talk about, like, school buildings. My daughter will come home and talk about very early, first week of school, how was school? It was terrible. The air conditioning's out at my school. And one of the things that's happening in the Seminole County Public Schools, we've deferred maintenance for too long, and so now we've got to change out the air conditioning systems from Freon to – it's either R-42 or R-22. I'm not an engineer, and I have no idea. No, something. But everything needs to be changed out, and there'll be more efficient systems. These are – I mean, it sounds like what does that have to do with education? But you try sitting in a classroom somewhere and learning, and the AC's out in Florida, you can't expect kids to be paying attention as well as they could. These are important things for education, and for us as a community, whether you have kids in the school or not, we've got to provide these things, and we've got to – this is, to me, an investment in our children and in our future.
Another question from Twitter from Travis asking, would you ever consider coaching college basketball?
I coached in college for 14 years.
Go back to it?
I would not. And I'll tell you why. I think I loved it at that level. But the one thing with college is it really is the recruiting is such a huge part of it now. And I didn't mind it when I was doing it. But I'm at the point that what I enjoy now is the actual on court, working with players, doing the basketball. And, you know, I had a coaching friend the other day in college coaching saying, you know, no more than 25% of my job is actually coaching and thinking about basketball. It's dealing with recruiting, academics of the players, booster clubs to raise money. And I really don't want to go back to that. After 30 years of coaching, I want to coach.
That being said, then, are you looking for another NBA job?
I'm not right now. Look, I mean, I think a big part of it is I still have the urge to coach, but we love where we're living, love Central Florida, love where we are in Lake Mary in Seminole County. And I've got kids at an age where I've got one in college, but I've still got two in high school and then one in the eighth grade who will be in high school. It's tough at that point in their lives to make a move. And if you're going to coach in the NBA, you're going to have to pick up and move. I'm not saying I definitely wouldn't, but it would have to be a situation at this point with my family where everybody was on board and said, yeah, this would be a good move for us. And trying to get six people to agree on anything in my family is not – I mean, we have a hard time agreeing on where to eat dinner. So to think that we're going to get six people to agree on, yeah, let's move to whatever this city, I don't know. So I would say in the near future – while I wouldn't rule anything out, I would say the probably the best bet is that we'll stay right here until Kelly finishes school at the very least.
We saw that you were also recently elected to the board of directors for the Central Florida Zoo and Botanical Gardens. And we have a question from the newsroom based on your knowledge of flora and fauna. If you were to have to put together a basketball team, what animals would you want on that team?
Well, I think certainly as a basketball coach, you know, we start with the giraffe. I don't think there's any question about that, though I don't know that the giraffe's height would really help us a whole lot because I don't know what he can do with the neck and the head.
Do you need thumbs or hands?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I'd love the tenacity of a lion. I mean, you know, there's a lot of good things there, but I don't know if any one animal would have all the characteristics we would need as a basketball player. But there's certainly animals who are great athletes.